Welcome to episode 163 of the Daniel Yoris podcast with today's guest, Dr. Jonathan Mike. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Joined here today by Dr. Jonathan Mike. John, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate your
time. Awesome, man. Great to be on as usual.
How many times in your life, I imagine it's a high number, have people mistaken your first name for being Mike?
I think it happens pretty much on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
If not an every other day type of scenario, but it's usually on a weekly basis, whether it's like, you know, emails or like in person or like DMs. Yeah. It's, I may have to just like start wearing a name tag.
Especially because you are a doctor, you're a PhD and you have that designation. So people, it's common to refer to you by doctor last name rather than just first name, right? Like someone like me is not, no one's going to refer to me as, well, I don't have a title. So no one's going to refer to me as my last name other than my buddies as a nickname or whatever. So I can only imagine it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fine. I've gotten used to it. And it's funny because like there's other in the industry, there's other like Dr. Mikes, but it's their first name. Like mine's my last name. So yeah, it gets a little bit of confusing, but yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. And I feel like amongst fitness people like non-fitness people, like any kind of group of people, like all those fitness guys look the same. All those PhD Mike-like guys, if you're not really paying attention, all look the same. Big buff dudes and that's it.
yeah, something like that. Yeah, for sure.
How do you describe what it is that you do now? Because you do a lot of different things. How do you describe what it is that you do?
I am a sports performance coach and entrepreneur. I'm a former university professor of 8 years. So I taught undergraduate and graduate courses. My PhD is in exercise and sports science, so I have a lot of publications, probably close to around maybe 24, if you include research and non-research. I've written 12 book chapters. I've been published and interviewed or contributed to every major fitness and consumer strength magazine in the country, both actual digital in print magazines or things online. I've done over 100 talks in the industry over the last 11 years. The vast majority of which have really picked up over the last 2 or 3 years, including both domestic and international. And now I'm transitioned over to the business side, and we are creating some newer, different content and potentially creating a course in person and online version and doing some soft launching for some online coaching now. So yeah, It's been an awesome, career so far, a lot of ups and downs. And, you have to have the ability to adapt and evolve and innovate in order to gain higher levels of, be the next higher version of yourself, so to speak.
It also seems a bit like the natural progression of things. Like the way to help the most people, I think, is almost to help other people help those people. Because if you can train up, 10 coaches who can then go and train 100 clients each, like that's 1,000 clients effectively. That you can't handle 1,000 clients at once. Like no person can handle 1,000 clients at once. So it seems like the natural evolution as you kind of continue to progress in these things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that the industry changes all the time, particularly both in research and just like within the industry. There's a lot of people that I've met, friends of mine and colleagues that have just left academia, completely, for various reasons. And when I ask them privately about their reasons, they all say the same thing, right? And just in different forms. Like, they just want more opportunities, more money, more networking, and just have a broader scope of everything that's really out there. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot more common, than you think, but, people tend to kind of stay within the same confounds, if you will. They stay within the same, framework. There's nothing wrong with like having your own specific interests and like what you like. I'm not really talking about that. But, change causes growth and growth causes change. And if you have a very difficult time handling that, well, you're going to have a hard time.
Was that also your reason for leaving formal academia? Just kind of wanting to explore related but different interests?
Yeah, it is. There's more financial benefit in both the short term, but especially in the long term. There's a higher ROI on the back end in the private sector and within industry. There's more networking. There's less politics involved, to be specific. People have good intentions, but, a lot of times people may not be really connected with either the students or they are disconnected with what really goes on out like in the industry. So, the whole purpose My whole reasoning for wanting to get a doctorate in the first place is kind of like become a hybrid individual, right? Somebody who has a lot of deep experience and exposures, you know, with coaching. You know, I go to a lot of events. I speak at a lot of events. You know, I know the science very well. I wanted to kind of blend both of those worlds together. And so early on, that's what I was able to do really in the classroom. And it's just, you know, as time went on, like I see these other opportunities and, you know, I meet people and constantly network. And I mean, every day, this is something I have to do all the time. And most people don't see that. They don't see like what really goes on behind the scenes. And so that was my whole rationale for really getting a doctorate in the first place, is to kind of be a hybrid, you know, but now I can still do that, but in other ways, whether it's, you know, more speaking, you know, a bigger, broader reach domestically and especially internationally, you know, going to, you know, products, you know, whether it's a course or even like a physical type of product, have more reach, have more influence, have more persuasion, you know, do better, higher degrees of content and kind of broaden the sense of larger social platforms.
It seems like, you know, people like you are leading the charge on this. There's this whole wave of now what has become a buzzword, and I think it's a little bit of a silly buzzword, but it's like this evidence-based coaching. And the reason I think it's a silly buzzword is because, like, well, if your coaching wasn't evidence-based, like, what was it? Just pulling out of your ass? Like, it's not, like, it's based on some type of evidence, which classification of evidence is a different story, but there is always the classic comparison of, you know, the guys in the laboratory, in the school system, in the academia, like, don't have any on-the-floor experience. So sure, that works in a research study, but does it work with real people? And then the opposite is true, like, oh, the bro science is just ignoring what's actually true, and they're just doing stuff with clients. And there's a way to blend that. And so we need to understand the hard science, but also understand, like, the art of coaching as well, and how to actually apply this to real people, be it athletes or, you know, gen pop clients as well.
Yeah, correct. I mean, I really don't have a hard time or a beef with the term evidence-based, you know, practice.
Neither do I. I just think buzzwords in general are funny.
I don't have an issue with the actual term in and of itself. My issue is how it's either, you know, because perception is, you know, reality for a lot of people, and perception is like reception, how people are actually, you know, receive that type of message. And I think in a traditional sense, the evidence base is, okay, here's what the scientific consensus is with topic X, Y, and Z. And then here's how coaches and trainers can take that, extrapolate that information, and try to implement that and execute that with the people that they actually work with. That's one way to do it. And there's nothing wrong with that. That continues to this day. And then you have the opposite, which is coaches and trainers that don't actually look at the research. It's either because they don't want to, they don't have time, they don't have an interest in it. Or maybe they feel that they just can't connect and really relate to the people who actually do the actual research itself. And that's a valid reason. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I understand their perspective, but there has to be somewhere of like a happy medium, right? And that's where, again, like why I wanted to get my doctorate in the first place. I wanted to kind of become like, quote, like that happy, you know, medium individual, to where I can relate to both sides, probably a slight bias towards the, you know, the coaching and the real world side, because I'm all about bringing like real world practical solutions to whether it's coaches, trainers, or students, and letting them know, okay, here's what the situation is. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Here's what we can use as guidelines to further, you know, matriculate yourselves and further, you know, solve actual problems. Because that's what the whole point is, really. I mean, what problems are you really trying to really solve? Like, what's the problem and how are you trying to solve it? And this is just basic business 101. But the same type of mentality needs to be implemented and yielded with, you know, coaches and even people in academia. Like, you know, you have to start thinking of yourself like as a business person, like as an entrepreneur. And even myself, like I never had any type of, you know, training or formal training, but I learned by being around people that know more than me, going to events that like you learn things, listening to shows, listening to podcasts, all this other stuff, and getting with people that can help you mold and create, you know, a plan, you know, and to execute it on and adapt, you know, over time. I mean, there's, you have to make decisions, whether they're good decisions or bad decisions, like make a decision and you have to, you know, it's just learning as you go. It's, you know what? It's just like training. Like no one's going to show you how to actually train. And what I mean is like nobody can do it for you. Like, you have to actually go do it. And that's how you learn. Like, this industry is built on learning by actually doing.
Absolutely. I think this medium middle ground kind of concept, it's not very conducive in today's social media and information transfer, the way that we receive and deliver information. Because I think it's true that, you know, training can be fun and exercise can be fun. And it can also be like technically, scientifically sound. Both things can be true at the same time. We don't have to do like silly exercises in the gym and just succumb to, oh, well, it's better than sitting on the couch eating chips. Like, sure, that's good. But we could also like exercise in a better way and also keep it fun. At the same time, we don't have to be so hardcore, be so meticulous about every single metric of training and technique wise and all this stuff and make it not fun for regular people. There's nothing wrong with either of these things, but we can blend this. It's just like when you go somewhere in the middle, the message doesn't get around. And so messages that get propagated are often on the extreme end of things. And neither of them are complete. Like, I'm sure you've worked in gyms and seen people. I've worked in gyms where, again, it's that opposite. One gym is like technically so, like, it would hurt your brain to see some of the things that are happening in that gym. But it's like, oh, well, you know, people are having fun here. It's like, okay, but they could also have fun and just train a little bit better as well.
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority of people, let's just be real, the vast majority of people just don't really train hard. They just don't. I mean, men and women. I'm not talking about actual, like, competitors, the people that are training to compete for a certain sport. I'm not talking about those people. It's a different type of mentality and different type of discipline. But the vast majority of people who go to the gym, men and women, just don't train hard. They don't train hard enough. They're not putting as much effort or like intensity of effort into what they're like actually doing. I'm not talking about the intensity of, the intensity of, well, how much load that you have. I'm talking about the intent to which you're actually doing the movement. It is like, it's very underrated and it's not discussed nearly to the degree as it really needs to be. And so that's what I would say, to that. I mean, we also have a very huge problem in this industry of people just spending too much time and just like majoring in the minors, like talking about shit that really doesn't matter like at all. It's like these constant questions of, well, how many sets and reps do I need to do? You know, like, what's the best exercise? Is it squats or front squats? Or is it, you know, hang cleans versus like power cleans? It's like, bro, like the vast majority of people like can't even deadlift their body weight or even do like a heavy kettlebell, you know, deadlift. Like, who cares about, you know, trap bar? What's better, trap bar or sumo or traditional? Like, I mean, the vast majority of people, they need to be able to do 10 pushups or pull-ups on their body weight. Or like I said, deadlift their body weight, just basic fundamental movements and basic fundamental training principles. And we spend too much time just focusing on things that really, like, we think that they matter, but it's just low hanging fruit. Like, they ultimately don't really matter. We need to be talking about bigger concepts and bigger problems to really solve.
One of the ones that I see with this exact thing that you're talking about is people get so caught up on what's the best workout split. Is it push-pull legs? Is it bro split? It's like, it doesn't matter. And they're all like almost the same. Like, the way that I kind of say it is like, the thing that matters most for what workout split works for you is, what does your life schedule allow for? Mm-hmm. Like, that is consideration number one. No one who's asking that question is like a professional bodybuilder or athlete of any kind. So it doesn't, like, you need to just get your training in during the week. Like, that is the thing that matters. And then train hard and train correctly when you're training. Again, majoring in the minors is definitely a problem, but it comes from, I believe it comes from social media. And you see a post that's like, this workout split, you know, blew up my biceps. This workout split made me shredded in 7 weeks. And it's like, that's where it comes from. And you think that's the solution, but really it's like, you know, years of dedicated training and hard training and dieting.
And it's oftentimes like, it could be somebody that you know of personally or know of through the fitness community. It's just a video of them doing a workout and it's AI doing the actual voice. And they just, and it's just made up. Well, that's another problem, a large potential problem that you're going to have to contend with. And a lot of times, like back in the old days, you still have them to a degree, but probably not as much, you know, the ghostwriters, you know, you have people that ghostwrite, you know, for magazine articles, and like, it's not even the workout that the person actually does. Like, it's just totally made up, you know? So it creates a false, sense of security, kind of like a false dichotomy with, you know, what is realistic and what's not.
Yeah. Every time a movie comes out where there's an actor who looks, you know, jacked and shredded, it's like, oh, you know, so-and-so's workout 6 weeks to get this body. It's like, you think that really, are we believing this still? Like, come on, we got to get past this now. But it happens and it is what it is. What are some of the ways that you think that we can teach people how to train hard? Like, you do have to learn this for yourself and it does come from experience and all that stuff. But are there any markers or metrics maybe that you use to help people learn the skill of training harder over time?
I think it really depends on the person and what their experience is. And I talk about this a lot. Almost every podcast that I've been on, especially in the last couple of years, I talk about the same thing. And I talk about experiences versus exposures. People can have a lot of experience. You know, somebody has 15, 20 years of experience, but their exposures to a wide variety of training, you know, methods, components, variables, tools, trained in different planes of motion, you know, speeds, tempos, exercise variations, like all that stuff, or other different types of programs that are out there, is rather limited. Mm-hmm. When you have a lot of experience, but your exposures are limited, it's going to limit your training ability, right? I mean, like, real talk, it will limit your training ability, your own training ability, but it will often lead itself into the limited training ability and programming for the people that you work with. Here's an example. And it's not a negative knock on, like, on bodybuilding at all. I just use that as an example. Obviously, bodybuilding is still popular. People still do it. People still go to the shows, all that stuff, and that's great. But if you're not a competitor, and if you don't compete in strength sports or whether it's strongman, powerlifting, bodybuilding, whatever it is, if all you know is bodybuilding and that type of framework in terms of that type of training, that's all you're going to be able to really give to your clients or people that you really work with. If you have a wider variety of exposures, and this could be things like, conjugate training method, you know, for example, you know, max effort, dynamic effort, repetition method, it could be 5-3-1, Jim Windler's type of stuff. It could be just, you know, 4-day splits, 5-day splits, you know, 3 total body workouts, or rotating out upper, lower total type of splits. Like, the list goes on and on, right? If all you know is one particular training method, then you're limiting yourself both with experience and exposures, and that's what you're only going to be able to give the clients or people that you actually really work with. Now, granted, it's context dependent, right? You don't see guys like Hanny Rambod, who's a, you know, professional bodybuilding coach with all the pros, and he's won, like, you know, 25, you know, different Olympias with all of his clients. That's context dependent. Like, he just coaches, like, pro bodybuilders, right? So, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, he's phenomenal at what he does. Like, you know, he's the best. But it's context dependent, right? I mean, you're not going to see a bodybuilding coach try to coach CrossFit athletes, right? And you're not going to have CrossFit athletes try to teach like pro bodybuilders. So it is environmental dependent. It is context dependent. It is sport dependent. So there's other, it's multifactorial. I don't feel comfortable working with, you know, bikini competitors, because that's not my type of demographic or target audience. Now, could I help them with the actual training portion? Sure. But when it comes to the diet, you know, the choreography, you know, all these other working components, you know, that's just not my area. So I know that. So I would go refer them out to somebody who actually is a lot more experienced, you know, in that regard. So again, what's your experiences? What's your exposures? What's your limiting factors? And what are your self-limiting beliefs? The vast majority of people have too many self-limiting beliefs, and it keeps them from not upgrading their life or upgrading their training experiences and enhancing their overall, you know, performance journey. And what I mean is the examples of, oh, well, one time I deadlifted, and one time I did this, one time I did, you know, X, Y, or Z, and ABC, and like, I get injured, so I don't really do it anymore. Okay, that's a valid reason, but why is it that you actually got injured? Like, were you doing something else that day, or did you just come off vacation, or do you have pre-existing injuries, or any type of pre-existing conditions? You know, that type of thing. There's always questions to really ask and to dig deeper. And if you ask them deeper questions, you'll often find out the actual answer. Maybe they didn't have any of those. Maybe their technique was just terrible and they got hurt because they weren't focused and their technique was, you know, horrendous at that time or for whatever it is that they were actually doing. So there's, if you just dig deeper, you're always going to find the tried and true answer.
Yeah. I love this idea of experience versus exposure. I think we see this a lot in probably more men, but like older guys who have been in the gym and like, oh, I do things this way and I've been doing it for 20 years. And so it must work. And it's like, well, just because you've been doing it for a long time doesn't mean it's the only thing that works. And it certainly doesn't mean that it's the thing that works for everyone. Like if there's anything that we know that there's not one way to do it for everyone that works for every single body, given injuries, given life circumstance, given goals, given training history, given all the things. We definitely know that. And so you can't apply this like, oh, well, you know, deadlifts are bad because, you know, Bobby at the gym hurt his back doing deadlifts, you know, 16 years ago and, you know, never healed. Like that's a Bobby at the gym 15 years ago problem. That's not a problem with deadlifts in general. And these training myths kind of get propagated. They get, you know, through the gyms, you know, your dad or your older brothers or your buddies and whatever it is that they all do it only this way. It's like, well, that's their experience, not their exposure to other things. And I think most of the time people just do things wrong, especially with an exercise. It's like, hey, that exercise injures me. Mm-hmm. Typically it's because it's like you're doing it wrong. And if you do it wrong, yes, it will injure you. But yeah, if you're doing it right,
they don't really know they don't really know like why they're doing it wrong. And they don't mm-hmm. really have people to actually show them, hey, this is why you're doing it wrong, this is how you're doing it wrong, and actually provide some alternative real world solutions so that they can get better. Like people don't, they're not around that as much as they really need to be. Or they, well, you know, it worked for Arnold or it worked for, you know, Chris Bumstead or whatever, or whoever it is, like, but you're not those people, right?
Right.
Guarantee you, like, if you actually did the workout that they do, like, you wouldn't get through it. I can't stand this shit. Like, well, it works for somebody. Okay. Well, dude, like, they're like N of one. If you want to get down to the nitty gritty of research methodology, like they're N of one. Like how many people are in the United States alone? Like, I mean, come on, just it's this type of mentality that really just needs to, it just needs to be significantly reduced, if not removed entirely.
Especially when you refer to a Chris Bumstead or some elite athletic, you know, athlete, professional, whatever. It's like that person has so many different things about them and about what they're doing than regular people that it is incomparable. Just because something did or didn't work for C-Bum, it has no bearing on whether it will or won't work for you. Like unless you're willing to do all of the things that he's doing, then you can't accurately draw a comparison there. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that frustrates me sometimes is when people say that you can't do one thing and their suggestion is something that is basically the same. An example of it is this, that a guy who I whatever worked for or worked with, whatever, said that nobody can do any type of hinging, RDL, deadlift, nothing where you're bending over at all, except you can do single leg RDLs. And I was like, well, how does that make sense? Like you're just making the exercise more difficult by adding a balance component and then claiming that it's somehow safer. Like this is completely backwards. Like I don't understand this concept of thinking, but then that gets passed on to whoever gets passed on to, and then these things get propagated, right? And
because people just take it at face value. Like they don't really question and they're asking any questions. Okay. Like why or like how, and since they don't ask that, they just take it at face value and just believe the first thing like anybody actually tells them because they're jacked and swole, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite things is when people like clients ask me, well, why are we doing this exercise? Like, okay, great. We can talk about it. And I can't give a blanket answer and I won't give a blanket answer like here because it's context dependent on that client. Maybe I'll do an exercise that's not optimal for whatever, for muscle building is what the most thing is. Like all the optimal stuff online is like for muscle building. Well, not everyone's trying to optimize their muscle building. Some people are just trying to move a little bit better. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's no, you know, like you've been doing a lot of like rotational stuff lately and whatever. And it's like, that's not optimal for bodybuilding. But if you're not trying to bodybuild, then who cares? Like,
do I think like the rotational stuff can be, you know, moderately beneficial for bodybuilding? Like, I mean, sure, but it's not going to have a large transfer because it's, you know, sport or a context or, you know, movement dependent, right? I mean, do bodybuilders get on stage and start doing like a bunch of rotation? Now, when I mean a bunch of rotation, I don't mean how you have to rotate to like pose. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking like the rotation of somebody doing a forehand, you know, or backhand, like, you know, during tennis. or during golf, right? So it's movement and exercise dependent too. So yeah, I mean, people just want to gain basic strength and basic mobility. And, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong, you know, with those things. It's just like, how are they getting better and how are you coaching them and teaching and educating them to where they can get stronger and reduce injury risk?
So for people who are regular trainees, maybe, you know, intermediate trainees, who are probably most of the people who are listening to this podcast, how would you suggest that they go about evaluating information that they see online or from their coach or from any coach or whatever to say like, hey, is this good for me? What are some questions maybe that they should be asking of people to try and figure out, is this exercise good? They see someone doing an RDL with their heels elevated or their toes elevated or some silly thing like, oh, it stretches more, it does whatever. And if you don't know any better, if you don't understand anatomy, you have no like training in that, it's not your fault that you don't know better. So how would you go about trying to help that person ask better questions and figure out more about training?
That's certainly a loaded question. I don't believe there's like one singular answer for it. I would start out with, does it help to know basic anatomical, you know, movements and what muscles like actually do? Like, you don't need to know all the insertions and origins and, you know, action points and all that stuff. A lot of times it just comes down to common sense, right? People just don't have common sense. I mean, and I've posted about this numerous times before, like per your example, when you're doing RDLs with your heels or your toes elevated, because people think it actually increases stretching or length of the hamstrings. I'm sorry, folks. It doesn't. You know, hamstrings or hip extensors and knee flexors. I mean, it has nothing to do, you know, with the ankle. You may have a little bit of gastroc or calf stretch, but that's not related to hamstring, you know, lengthening, or even, you know, lengthened partials or, you know, hypertrophy or whatever it is. In fact, if you go watch my videos, I in the caption, and even when I'm talking, you actually can't maximize hip extension when you have heel or toe elevated. And you don't necessarily need to know all the anatomical parts of the biomechanics of it. If you just go through the motion with either lighter weight or moderate weight, you can just actually feel the difference. So sometimes it's just about explaining to somebody, just try it and see how you feel. There's always going to be people that say, well, I did this, worked for me. Yeah, like, you know, okay, well, either you don't have common sense, you don't understand basic anatomy and biomechanics, or you're just so caught up in your confirmation bias that you don't want to unlearn things to like relearn things that are actually tried and true, you know, training or anatomical biomechanical principles. So that's number one. The second thing is just go read some research, all right? Read a basic, you know, anatomical book. If you don't know what those are, biomechanics books, send me a DM. I'll send you some, you know, links to some great stuff. I mean, look on YouTube. You know, take the time to actually read and listen and watch and educate yourself on these fundamental training, you know, principles. Most people think like you need the more complex stuff that you actually do, like the better. And that's not the case at all. You need to master the fundamentals first, because the people that get really good at training, regardless of what type of sport, they get really good at the basics. And, you know, 80%, 75 to 80% of what they actually do is the quote unquote, like, you know, the boring stuff, right? There's a very popular individual in the fitness industry. He has a very large following, who does a lot of crazy and very, very unconventional exercises, like with his clients. And I can tell you that this person only uses those about 20% of the time, but this individual posts those things 100% of the time, right? And some are interesting and some are, you know, I'm not really sure about this. And some are like, I don't really think this has much transfer. But like people just see the complex stuff and they just either want to try it, implement it without understanding all the little nuances. I mean, there's so many nuances to training that people just don't really talk about, you know? So follow the individuals that actually, what kind of results have they gotten? What's their background information? How many people have they actually worked with? Do they post content? Do they go to events? Do they speak at events? Like, all these things really help to understand who to really listen to and who are the actual real ones out there.
And what's applicable to your actual life? You're following people who are training, you know, one NFL player or a, you know, whatever, professional athlete of some kind, and they're doing some, you know, weirdo exercise in a pool, catching weird shaped balls, standing on one leg, doing upside down. Like, yeah, that's great, but this is like more of a of an expression of their strength, of their athleticism, let's say, as a blanket term, rather than a training tool. Like, no one's training by doing that. You're just able to do that because of your training, because that guy can squat 650 pounds. Like, that's why that, you know, they're able to do these things. But it's boring. It's not that exciting. It's not always that cool to talk about doing the basics and to just keep doing that and the consistency of it and the monotony of it to a degree. And so, you know, the message gets lost. But I think that people need to, it comes back to critical thinking. Right. You need to figure out, like, okay, well, I'm doing this and I feel this. What if I try it this way? I think it's okay to experiment in the gym. It's, you know, like, fuck around and find out idea a little bit. Like, but you have to remember about the finding out part. Like,
right.
you can't just mess around and then not pay attention to whether it was better or worse or equal or advantageous for this thing or not. Like, you have to be critical about what's going on and then figure out how to apply that to yourself and with the evidence that you can get from YouTube and podcasts and, you know, your coach and from whoever you can get. But it's really hard to implement that finding out and that critical thinking piece, because you're right that most of this stuff is simple. If you were very honest with yourself, and going back to the RDL example, and you did an RDL normally with your feet flat on the ground, and then you did one with your toes elevated, your heels elevated, and you did it with the same weight under the same circumstances, you would realize, like, oh, when I mess with my toes, like, this is just worse. This is just the worst exercise. I don't feel balanced. I can't move as well. And that's it, right?
Yeah, the same thing can be said about, like, different exercise variations or a given piece of exercise equipment. Yep. Like, take leg press, for example. I don't fit in most leg presses. Now, does that mean I hate leg press or don't do it? No, I just can't fit in the vast majority of leg presses. Now, there are certain other types of equipment like Atlantis or Prime that I fit, you know, very well in, but some of them I just don't. I don't use that as an excuse to, like, oh, you know, I don't fit in this, so leg press sucks, and, like, it's a waste of time. Those are excuses. What I do instead is, okay, how can I position myself, or what other similar movement can I do in order to maximize my own leverage and my own biomechanics to get the most use out of it? So you're basically taking A and you're molding it into, you know, A1 or a B, for example, to get the most leverage based out of your own, like, you know, biomechanics, so you can maximize the exercise. Like, you know, for example, like pit sharks. Not a huge fan of them. Not because I don't fit. It's because the vast majority of them, and there's different variations and brands of, like, belt squats. I'm just specifically talking pit shark here. A lot of people use it, and that's great. But, you know, over the last number of years, and I've used it. God, I mean, I still use it, but for different things. And I'll share whatever it is I'm going to share with you. I found that you have to load it up with a shit ton of weight in order to have any type of decent transfer to, you know, regular free bar squatting, you know, or single leg movements, or, you know, or whatever it is. So what I do instead is that I will take a couple of foot wedges, do the same movement, put some foot wedges underneath there, and have a little bit more added knee flexion to get a little bit more quadriceps and go a little bit deeper, you know, in the movement. So therefore, I can alter the exercise and the leverage a little bit, and I don't feel I have to load it up with, like, you know, six or seven plates on each side. I can lower the load, put foot wedges underneath there, and actually gain a little bit more, you know, leverage and get a higher ROI out of the exercise. So that's an example of how somebody can go about doing that. It's just, it could be the same thing for, you know, other body parts or machines or whatnot. So you're right. Like, you have to have a degree, an ongoing degree, if you will, of experimenting with different types of movements for a given area of the body or very different types of machines. I mean, a seated cable row machine is not the same thing as a, you know, machine, a row plate loaded or pin loaded from Prime equipment, which utilizes different resistance profiles throughout the given range of motion. The movement itself is the same if the technique is the same, but how it feels and the leverage that you get based on different companies and brands and how they're set up is very, very different.
This goes back to what you were saying earlier about training intensity and how to define it. And it doesn't necessarily mean lifting heavier. Lifting heavier at the same exercise with the same setup with the same technique over time is a good thing. But lifting heavier for the sake of having a, you know, putting a higher number down in your workout tracking app doesn't actually matter. Like your example here, where if you did that exercise without the heel wedges, you could load up 6 or 7 plates. Now, when you do it and you set it up differently, you gotta put some less weight on. That doesn't make it any less intense, any less effective. It's just different, and different things can be better. And I think that is something that is also sometimes missed, is like, well, I like to do a machine chest press instead of a barbell bench press, because on the seated machine, I can load up 3 plates and I can hammer it out. But on a regular bench press, I'm, you know, stuck at 185, right? And heavier doesn't necessarily equal better. It's just different. And understanding those things and maybe finding ways to use less load for some people, but the same intensity of training is also good. Maybe less stress on their joints and, you know, whatever, for different people, for different things, different injuries. So again, all these considerations like really matter. And the training hard piece is the thing that equals out most other mistakes. Like, I'm sure you know some guys who kind of like, you look at their technique and it's not great, but they've been training like pretty hard for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And they look like, you know, not a supermodel, but they look like they're in pretty good shape, versus someone who maybe does things a little bit more correctly, but just doesn't really train all that hard. And they don't really have the physique to show for it. And so training hard really does equal out a lot of other shortcomings. It's not a, you shouldn't do it instead of, you should do both of them, but it can make up for a lot.
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. There's also this concept of, that I recently started talking about, is exercise skill acquisition. And what I mean is, you can do a given movement. Let's just talk about squats, for example. Barbell squats versus, say, goblet, kettlebell or dumbbell, like goblet squats. Barbell squats have, it's a high skill. It can be high physical demand and, you know, rather high, moderate to high degree of like physical demand. Now, it depends on the load, depends on whether it's barbell squat, or maybe you're doing, using a different type of bar or front squat. So all those have a moderate to high degree of technical skill, physical demand, and just, you know, high movement skill in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You take that same concept and you apply it to dumbbell or kettlebell like goblet squat. Okay. Low skill, low intensity, lower physical demand. Okay. So here's basically two movements. It's a squat pattern, and they're done differently, but they have different degrees of skill, technical ability, or physical demand. And I mentioned this because, like, not everything is a barbell or kettlebell like or a dumbbell. Not everything that you need to be basing your training program around is going to be centered around squat, bench, and deadlift, or squat, bench, and like power clean. I mean, like, this is just ridiculous. Again, outside the confines of, you know, true, tried and true powerlifting, you know, you can actually get people strong and rather powerful and not really do a whole lot of barbell power cleans or jerks or like Olympic lifts or, you know, derivatives. But it's important for trainers and coaches to understand the differences between like exercise and movement skill acquisition. Like, what has a high skill? What has a low skill? What's moderate? You know, what's a low, you know, moderate? What's high physically demanding? I mean, if I'm going to teach somebody how to deadlift and they have no experience deadlifting, sorry, I'm not using a trap bar. I'm not using a barbell. I'm going to use a kettlebell. Okay. Why? Because it's easy. Because it's low skill, it's low technicality, and it's low physically demanding. They can understand how to do that in like a couple of training sessions. Whereas like a barbell sumo or traditional deadlift takes weeks, right? So you have to understand, you know, what the time component that it takes to gain the new skills versus introducing other variations that take less time because the skill is less, physical demand is less, and the intensity to which you can do it is less intense. And of course, intensity is a sliding scale, right? I mean, not, you can do heavy kettlebell goblet squats with a high load. It's a higher intensity or intensity load. It's still low skill, but then it becomes maybe a moderately, you know, physical demanding type of exercise. So there's a sliding scale between the three based upon what you're actually doing.
And just the reality of the logistics of that exercise. Like, you can squat with 200 pounds on a bar on your back, you're probably not going to hold 200 pounds and a kettlebell in your hands and do a goblet squat. It's just way more difficult. Like, it's just not going to happen. And so, sure, it's a 200 pound squat, but different things. And this is where, you know, there's no specifically required exercises. I think there are, like, we can say that there's maybe required movement patterns. Like you've got to do some sort of squat, some sort of hinge, some sort of push, some sort of pull, but there's no specific required exercises unless, again, you are a, you know, competitive power lifter. Mm-hmm. This is where like the machines, like you said, come into play, or they can come into play a lot. Someone who's brand new to training, maybe they're so, you know, overwhelmed from their job, they come to the gym, like they don't have the mental capacity left to figure out, to be taught how to do a deadlift, how to do whatever, but they can sit on a machine and they can like get the muscles and get the movement patterns, and like that is still very good, and they can still do that correctly, assuming the training program is designed properly. And that can be an entry point, and then they work up to learning how to do deadlifts. Like you don't have to jump into doing these super complex exercises. It's usually like a bad idea if you did so.
Yeah, it is.
I had one guy who I used to train a while ago, and he saw some YouTube videos, something, and said, "Oh, we should do power cleans." And I said, "But we can't even do a squat yet. What do you mean power cleans? Like, how are we gonna get there?" And I kind of challenged him on this, and we had that, you know, good kind of relationship. And I was like, "Well, why do you think we should do this?" "Oh, I saw on YouTube it's good for, you know, developing power and glutes and legs and this." And I said, "Yeah, that all that is correct." I said, "Show me how to do it with no weight in your hand." And like, there, you know, there's no coordination. There's no, I said, "Okay, we've got to break this thing down. Like we can get there, but it's going to take us a few months, like not today, but like, you know, we'll get there." And you have to just, again, break down these movements, learn where you are and learn how to move, how to train. That skill of training is not impossible to develop, but is something that you definitely do have to develop. And it makes progress so much easier once you really, everything really clicks and you really do learn how to train.
Absolutely.
How did you think that you learned how to train? Like when you were first learning, what was it for you?
I did have somebody show me the initial ropes, you know, early on, which is very important. Like you need a good, you know, mentor. They don't need to be a competitor. They don't need to, you know, have a big social following, but you just need somebody to teach you just the very, very, very basics. What this exercise is, what muscles does it work? Here's the fundamental technical, you know, breakdown of it, and 3 or 4 simple steps. And you do that for fundamental movement patterns. But then there comes a time, it's like, you know, you want to learn how to do more of the complex movements. So again, it's what I mentioned earlier, like you have to learn by doing, right? I mean, really the only way to really learn is just you have to get in and you have to do it yourself. I mean, you can watch all the videos that you want. You can read all the books. You can read all the articles. You can scroll through social all you want, but ultimately you're going to have to get your ass, you know, into the gym and go through a series of trials and tribulations for years and years. I've been training for 25 years this summer. Okay? I'm a multi-sport athlete. I competed in the sport of strongman many times, 7-8 contests, which in the grand scheme of things, it's not like a ton. But, you know, I got top 4 for all of them. I still would like to do another one sometime in the future because I can do master's division now. But I'm always a student of the game. I mean, even when I was teaching, you know, overhead press and like deadlift workshops and stuff, and I still do that from time to time at certain events. But I'm always learning a way to better coach it or better teach it. Like, I wonder if I missed something. Like, did somebody, maybe I should go and see, like, if somebody maybe said something or a cue or whatever that I like or I resonate with, and then I can coach and teach other people, you know, how to do that. So, if you have to be a student of the game, but you're going to have to like be in the game, right? Mm-hmm. You have to live the game. You have to love it. You have to breathe it. Like you have to be like obsessed with it. And those are the people that tend to have a long, long durations and longevity in the industry and remain at high relevancy.
Yeah. I feel like the second you think that you know everything and have nothing left to learn, like you're lost. Like there's always something you can learn. There's always something you can kind of clean up and pick up. And just going back to what you said about, you know, your early days in training and learning to train, I think this is one of the underrated things about having a coach in as far as learning how to train, is it's that external person to push you. This could even come from just like a training partner, like a friend, yeah, to go to the gym with. It's like, you know, you think you're done, you're at failure, but really you've got like, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5, 10 reps left sometimes. But that external person is going to be the one who's going to push you through it. And then, you know, the only way to find the limit is to kind of like almost cross it or get really close to it. And so when you think you're at that limit, when you think that you're training hard, but you've got so much left in the tank, you might be selling yourself short, genuinely thinking that you're pushing as hard as you can, but you've got more to give. And so you need that external person to evaluate you and be like, hey, you've got some more here. Like, let's really push it. And this is where like then you really learn how to train hard in addition to all of the skill of the exercises and training methods that you're using.
That's right. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time. I know that we're going to cut this a little bit short and finish up here. Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss and, you know, talk about?
That's it. You can follow me at drjmike.com. You can follow me on all social platforms. Instagram, Dr. J Mike. Same thing for TikTok. Same thing for Threads. Same thing for YouTube. And I think it's the same for Facebook. Yeah, I'm on all social platforms. Please reach out. Happy to help. And bro, thanks so much for having me on. It was great.
Of course, it's a pleasure. Looking forward to meeting you at one of the many conferences and things that you're at, and hopefully that I'll be able to get to later this year as well. But Dr. J Mike everywhere on all socials. You can find him there, follow him, learn from him, and apply the things in your own life. You know, like, share, subscribe to the podcast, all that good stuff. Thank each and every one of you for listening. As always, go outside, be a good person. See you next time.